afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cedarstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Thursday, July 14th, 2022. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hey, good afternoon, Melody. And well, just be a little risque. It's Happy National New Day, if you can believe that's what we're celebrating.
Jeez.
We're not going to ask listeners if you're listening to Financial Survival in your birthday suit, but only if you agree to ask if we're delivering the program in ours. I assure you we're not, but please don't ask. More importantly, though, Melody, it's National Mac and Cheese Day.
That's worth spending more time on than the
other. There you go. So if you're not inhibited by bad carbs, I'd go ahead and enjoy a big batch for dinner.
Mac and cheese.
There you go. Right.
Add a little bit of lobster to it. You got a meal.
Indeed.
Well, you know, we're going to talk a lot about inflation today, and I know every the old was always about, you know, gold was a hedge for inflation. And I'll tell you what, they've just beaten it down. It really is incredible. But I really do believe that when we turn around, it's just going to spike like a beach ball that is being held underwater and it escapes because, and you know, it's all with the stronger dollar. All with the, we're going to raise these rates. And the thing of it is, gold has actually performed the best during a high interest rate arena. When they begin to increase, the rates, that gold has gone up. And we got some numbers I think I'll share tomorrow. I don't have them right in front of me, but I've been doing some research on it too. So you got to hang in there, and it's great buying opportunities. You have gold down $25 today at $17.11. And everybody in this whole industry thought when we seen these two inflation reports yesterday and today that gold would take off. So the whole industry is just waiting. Silver is down 74 cents at 1856. Platinum was down 11 at 855. Palladium was down 54 at 2014. You got the dollar run into almost 109. These are the highest levels in 20 years. And guess where that takes us? You know, 108.60, up 0.59. Little pressure on crude oil today, 96.26. Paper markets today, they were down big this morning, but they were able to bring them back. The Dow was only down 142 points at 30,630. S&P was only down 11, 3790. NASDAQ was actually up with 3 whole points at 11,251. And let's see, Dave, I've done so much talking today. Can you just take over for the rest of the report?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Bear with me while I call up those screens. I'm just going to we see that the oil is down a little bit today. Domestic WTI at $96.04 a barrel. Natural gas down about four tenths of a percent at 6.66. With the dollar index up again, another 20-year high. I mean, we've got the 10-year yield actually up today, 2.96. But the inversion continues, both the 5-year at 3.06 and the 2-year yield at 3.13. exceed the 10 years. So again, a lot of economists think that particularly an extended reverse or inverted yield curve is a sign of a coming recession within the next couple of months. So we'll see what happens there. Some believe we've been in one. Lastly, in the equities, you got just about all of the international markets down today, with the exception of the Nikkei, which was up about 0.6%. Here in the States, you got the Dow Jones down about 142 points at 30,630. The tech-heavy NASDAQ actually up 3 points and change, 11,251. And the S&P 500 down 11 points at 3,790. I think I covered the bulk of it. Volatility is still high by historic standards, not as high as it's been, but still up around 26. We like to see it, or I should say traders like to see it closer to 15. So there you have today's market report, sponsored by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. Melody.
Thank you, Dave. I'll tell you what.
What?
Yesterday was a special day.
Happy birthday!
And I received a ton of flowers. And I think Mary Ellen and I, we've been sneezing all day. She's been sneezing all day. And finally we came to the conclusion, it's the flowers. So we will have to adjust that. And and plus I was talking all afternoon, all day, so that kind of just added to it. So if I have another attack like that, you might just have to
see you tomorrow.
Yeah.
Well, perhaps we'll have to encourage clients to send you chocolate next year.
Well, you know, Jamie Dimon, he's ripping the Fed's stress test as a terrible way to run a financial system. But his bank did halt buybacks. But, I mean, he's just crying. And we're going to talk about this later on in the program. Because his profit slumped, 26% or something like that?
Yeah, 28%,
So now he's got to start blaming the Fed. And it could very well, it is all so ridiculous. And it's, you know, their heads are going to be swimming pretty soon. And but we're going to start out today with inflation. Another month, another day, another terrible inflation report. And there's just no way to put a positive gloss on yesterday's atrocious numbers. These price increases shows no signs of slowing. I'm sure Butch talked about it yesterday. The consumer price index rose 1.3% in June alone, bringing the last year's price gains to a sizzling 9.1%. Now, this is the highest annual level since November of 1981. Gasoline prices rose over 11% last month. It's just there's some troubling signs in these reports beyond the sharp rise in food and energy prices, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, for those who said it was transitory, I mean, sheds credibility from what you have to say. Even those who believed it's peaked, which a lot of people were, I think more than anything, were hoping when they saw that 8.6% last month. Now that they see over 9.1% the consumer side, it's a little higher on the producer side, we'll talk about in a minute. I think they're regretting that, shall we say, irrational exuberance But, well, to get technical, the core index, which, as you know, strips out the so-called volatile factors, the energy and food prices, it's also rising fast, accelerated to 0.7% in June after 2 months of holding a little bit below that level. Over the last 3 months, core CPI has risen at an annualized rate of 7.9%. I mean, high inflation is becoming embedded even in sectors of the economy with minimal connection to energy prices. I mean, look at shelter costs, a key factor in pushing up the CPI, rent rising 0.8%, the biggest monthly increase since 1986. We have a short article later on in the program about rents in Manhattan, in New York City. Crazy what they've just passed. But you know, the price hikes are broad-based, and that's going to add to the sense of alarm, not just in households and in some corporate boardrooms, but at the Fed. And that's more than likely going to lead to talks of going to places even higher than the 75 basis point increase that the FOMC implemented last month. I mean, car insurance prices rose 1.9% in June alone, 6% for the year. Medical care up nearly 4.8% over the last year. So I believe it I'm not going to say I believe it makes it more certain. I mean, certainly the Fed futures bettors believe there's almost a 100% chance of a 1% increase. I'm not sure about that. So yesterday's report, certainly an ugly one for the Fed, also the White House and consumers. All of us want to see inflation coming down in a big way.
But we all know that it isn't going to go down in a big way because this is where we're at. And even on the heels of yesterday's CPI number, this was really kind of shocking. The PPI, the producer price index, which is a measure of the prices received for the final demand products, that increased 11.3% from a year ago. Now, this is the highest reading since the record 11.6 in March. Of that gain, almost 90%, of course, came from the from a 10% increase in final demand of energy costs for oil, natural gas. But excluding energy as well as food and trade service prices, the so-called core PPI rose 6.4% on a 12-month basis, and that's actually down a little bit. But, of course, that's the number they're going to use to make, oh, no, it's down. Okay, all right. So, yeah, and it was always such a joke. And, you know, it's funny to see all of these when they do these news reports, everybody saying, oh, inflation is just transitory. Inflation is just transitory. Inflation is just transitory. And they all were all saying the same thing. And now they're eating a little bit of crow. But my question is, if they couldn't be truthful about the inflation then, how can you believe anything that they're saying now going forward? You can't. So,
yeah, it's that credibility thing again. And it's going to hurt. And there's already enough uncertainty in the economy to have that, you know, kind of conundrum following you around. And I mean, you know, Fed's got to get its act together. And they're already way behind the eight ball in dealing with this. And in some ways, I thought, well, maybe that's okay as long as they don't feel they got to overdo it to compensate. Well, that's what appears is going to be happening. And so, you know, the old saying, two wrongs don't make a right. And well, we're heading in that direction, I'm afraid. Anyway, you know, they expect it to keep pressing forward on their interest rate hikes. And, of course, off the side. We're not hearing a whole lot about it right now. They're quantitative tightening by unloading their $8.9 trillion balance sheet of treasuries and mortgage-backed securities, but they're all trying to bring inflation down to their target range of 2%. And that's going to be, I mean, I hate to be so rigid or arbitrary, but it's going to be next to impossible for the foreseeable future. Just doesn't leave me feeling warm and fuzzy, Melody.
Mm. Well, you know, people's wages, though, I mean, look what they're just dropping like a rock, too. So, you know, even though you have a robust job market, the typical worker is ending up, you know, financially worse off with every month that passes. I mean, he's losing thousands and thousands of dollars due to this hype. So, you know, it's just a matter of time until we begin to see these people cutting back in a major way, Dave.
Yeah, well, you know, we've already been seeing a couple of months falling consumer sentiment, falling builder sentiment, when your wages, you know, you get the good news that you're getting decent wage increases for the first time in a couple of years, some several years, and some it's coming back from the shutdown economy. It's pretty disconcerting when all those wage increases are getting eaten up by price increases and more. I mean, since September, average hourly earnings for private sector workers are up 2.2%. That net normally wouldn't be too shabby for a six-month period, except that consumer prices rose 5.4% in that same span, more than double the hourly earnings. Over the past 12 months, the average pay for non-managerial workers is actually down 2.7% after factoring in inflation. That's the steepest drop since 1980. There's been some debate about why public opinion on the economy has been so negative, despite a pretty healthy job market the last year. Now, the data on real wages make it not much of a mystery at all.
Hmm. Hey, we're heading into a break right now. We'll be returning shortly. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk CommonSenseTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Please make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter and blog, edited and produced by Dave. So we also have Wendy Wilson in there and Doug Noland, his articles, and some other ones with the market report. So no cost to you, and we enjoy your comments also. So check out the website, dgscoins.com. I'm just going to touch briefly, jobless claims. They're beginning to rise. It's hit the largest or the highest level in 8 months. Applications for jobless aid for the week ending July 9th rose by 9,000 to 244,000. And these first-time applications generally reflect layoffs. They were expecting the number to remain flat from the previous week, so that didn't happen. So the total number of Americans collecting jobless benefits for the week ending July 2nd fell 41,000 from the previous week. And I don't think there's anything other earth-shattering news about that report except the U6 unemployment rate. Dave, that fell a little bit.
Yeah, that fell from 7.1 to 6.7%. I'm not even going to mention the headline. You hear it just about every other news source. It's grossly underreported, and I think just a terrible reflection of where we actually are. Plus, government also reported that employers have advertised fewer jobs in May amid signs about a weakening economy, although there still are nearly two job openings for every unemployed person.
All right. Well, in the beginning of the program, we talked about J.P. Morgan Chase, and it's just amazing that they get away with what they do, and everybody's all hush hush and mum about it, and these two big to fail banks, and J.P. Morgan and Chase, particularly this one, reported today that its second quarter profit slumped as they built reserves for bad loans by $428 million and suspended share buybacks. Bad $428 million.
Peanuts.
His increasingly cautious stance on everything, and he's warning, everybody about the geopolitical tension, the high inflation, waning consumer confidence, the uncertainty about how high rates have to go, and never seen before quantitative tightening, and what are the effects on this global liquidity. And these are the issues. These are what we talked about, but it just cracks me up that he has the nerve to come out and talk about this because he loses, his second quarter profits. They all get bailed out. If anything happens to, guess what? They'll get bailed out again. So their shares fell about 5% in early trading today. It was a 52-week low, Dave.
I suspect we'll be reading about the multi-million dollar bonus that he received this year despite the drop, the 28% profit decline to $8.6 billion, by the way. $8.6 billion still in profit.
Yikes.
And these are the same guys that got hammered again for messing with the commodities market.
Five felony convictions. Now, they pleaded guilty to all of them, including manipulating the precious metals market. Five times under Jamie Dimon's watch for financial misdeeds.
And he gets million-dollar bonuses.
It's pathetic, and it's I'm trying to think of the right word, but we'll just say that it's wrong.
But you also have Morgan Stanley. They've also reported second quarter results that were below expectations. Their profit dropped 29% to $2.5 billion. Revenue fell 11%. And driven by the steep 55% decline in investment banking revenue. That's kind of interesting. The results confirm what some analysts had feared for Morgan Stanley, which runs one of the larger equity capital markets operations on Wall Street. Firm's investment banking division produced $1.07 billion in second quarter revenue, $400 million below analysts, $1.47 billion estimate. So,
I'm sure.
And these people, none of them get it right, but yet that's what people trust. These are the people that trust their investments to.
I'm sure their board of directors are just slapping each other on the back and hooting and howling at their CEO's propaganda spin. Jim Gorman said in response to the 29% drop in profit, overall, the firm delivered a solid quarter in what was a more volatile market that we've seen for some time. Now, Morgan Stanley repurchased $2.7 billion of its own stock during the last quarter alone, and its board just approved a new $20 billion share buyback program.
Huh. Amazing.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. It'll be fun to see what happens with Goldman Sachs and Citigroup, Bank of America, and Wells Fargo, all the other too big to fails. They report their second quarter earnings on Monday.
$2.7 billion buyback of their own stock during the latest quarter.
Second quarter.
During the second quarter, yeah. That truly is amazing. And it approved another $20 billion?
A new $20 billion? For the next year, presumably.
For buybacks?
Yeah.
Anyway, we all know where it truly is amazing that these crooks are able to get away, though. But you know what? It's no surprise. You know, the whole system is corrupt. Our governments, everything seems to be corrupt nowadays, and it's all for the almighty dollar. And they're just keeping the system together to keep it flowing so they can strap everyone for just a little bit more, take just a little bit more of your earnings, a little bit more of your savings, just a little bit more. And as long as it's just a little bit more, a little at a time, people are saying, eh, okay, I guess that's the way it works. And nobody says anything. And you know, I'm going to get upset with this because it seems like your weekly Levity is Golden is there to get me a little fired up, Dave.
Speaking of stress.
You know, and it's interesting. I'll let you start because it is about stress, but you're taking it to some of these big cities. And when you look at the cities that you're going to talk about, it's the reasons. You know, they could poke numbers at why, but no one really gives the reasons, and you can look straight to government for the problems that these big cities are having. And for those who get elected into office, they're not managing. They're turning these large cities just into slums. And it just goes by the wayside. And the numbers and stuff that you're reporting it's interesting, absolutely interesting, because they're talking about stress. And it's like, well, the people of these cities are creating their own stress by electing the officials that they elect, right?
I'm not sure I'd view it like that, but you know, if you're feeling anxious, you aren't alone. I mean, Philadelphia, where I live near, turns out is the fifth most stressed city in America.
And the crime in these cities anymore, Dave, that would stress anybody out. Moreover, work.
Well, it might seem like a clicky list, but the ranking stems largely from Philly's positions as one of the poorest big cities. Now, Philly's sisters.
And whose fault is that?
Philly's sisters at the top of the list, Cleveland, Detroit, Baltimore, have a similar profile.
And whose fault is that?
A burden of deep structural poverty while simultaneously reckoning their post-industrial futures. Philly ranks second for work stress, sixth for financial stress. Now, work stress includes things we can all agree are not good. Traffic congestion, commute times. Yes, thank you, the Schuylkill Expressway, which over the years is known by the moniker of the Schuylkill Expressway. But it also pulls in far bigger issues like job security metrics and the share of households where no adults work. Financial stress includes things like poverty rate, household debt, credit scores, and food insecurity. I mean, Pew actually measured Philly's poverty rate in 2019 at 23.3%. It's the third highest in the U.S. and more than double the national average of 10.5%, something the pandemic has likely made worse. Now, other members of the unfortunate top four, Cleveland, the poverty rate of 31%, Detroit right behind at 30.6%, and Baltimore at 20.2%. Now, poverty in Philly, like many other cities, large and small, but, you know, usually find it more in the urban centers, disproportionately affects people of color. Sometimes, Melody, a simple internet ranking can expose the deeper truths about where we live. And that is this week's Levity is Golden.
You know, again, these stats and so forth is interesting, but the big question is never asked. Why? Why are these cities run into the dirt? Number one, jobs left this country. That was a big part of it. But, I mean, these big cities, how they are run is disgusting. And you can point to all of these large cities, these inner cities, and again, the corruption in the government. And they get so much money from the federal government. And you know what? Everybody just turns their cheek and says, you know, look at the crime in these cities. Crime is going up everywhere. I mean, it was just in Philly last weekend. An old man got beaten to death by a traffic cone, by a group of kids. That would put a lot of stress on you. But you hear these stories everywhere, just not Philadelphia. And some of the stories coming out of these cities, Dave, it's just, look what's happening in California. In those cities, San Francisco used to be a beautiful city. Now you can't even walk down the street with the homeless and the drugs. I don't get it. And no one is out there saying, or at least I haven't heard, gee, what can we do? I can remember the homeless back in the 80s where you had all the Hollywood people, you know, do all kinds of things to help them and so forth. Maybe they created programs and maybe they're helping them now, but not to the degree that it really makes any big difference. You don't hear anybody talking about this stuff anymore. So it's just like we're on this downward decline and there's no stopping it. And putting in $4 trillion isn't going to make it better either, because in my view, my opinion, it isn't what's going to be spent isn't going to make a hill of bean difference. So it's, this country is stressed out all over the place. You know, it takes people two jobs to, you know, to work two, three jobs to make ends meet. And that's all part of the inflation. It's all part of your dollar buying less and less. So it's a sad state of affairs. We look more like a third world nation anymore. Our infrastructure is decaying. And I can remember, I shared this on the program, I remember driving out to California with my cousin's daughter back in 2003. And she had just gotten back from a trip with her aunt from Guatemala. There's family down there, and they went down there to visit. And then when they got back, her and I took a trip. We drove from Pennsylvania out to California. We had to go through Albuquerque, New Mexico. And I used to market New Mexico, and Albuquerque was one of my big, you know, accounts. I loved Albuquerque, New Mexico. It was awesome. But when I went back in 2003, I was shocked. And this young girl, she was, what, 20, 21 then? She says, this looks like Guatemala that she had just come from. And that was back in 2003. And so there was barbed wire around the fences. I couldn't believe it. And so, I mean, this country's been decaying for a long time. And so I don't know where we go from here, but we can talk about gold from here. I guess my little speech tape took up all the time, but, you know, we're still on track to go over 2,000 by the end of the year for gold. And for gold, silver is going to continue to rise. Nothing is bringing it down. The fundamentals are still intact. Inflation is going to continue to increase, and it's the dollar that has been hurting gold's price, as we've seen it drag down to 8-month lows. And it's a steal to be buying it now. So 1-800-375-4188. I guess we are heading into a break. We'll be back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival. Oh, you tell me again.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CommonSenseVoices.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hey, one more time today. Welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Melody taking care of other client business. This last segment, you can reach her at 1-800-375-4188. We put some closure on last thing Melody was talking about, gold, too big to fail bank analyst Wells Fargo says gold still on track to hit $2,050 by the end of the year. Of course, been on the decline with the dollar rising to a 20-year high. I mean, this morning it popped up again to 109. Crazy. At the same time, August futures were down at 1695 before inching upward. Last time futures were this low was June of 2020. Yeah, Wells Fargo strategy head John LaForge says the U.S. dollar has risen 12% since the start of the year, with almost half of that gain coming in the last month. Such big moves, he continues, are quite rare, but when they do happen, commodity prices typically suffer because most commodities are priced in U.S. dollars. While the broader commodities index has also suffered due to higher dollar and rising recession fears, and certainly hurting the demand outlook for industrial and precious metals. But with prices down, time to buy. As the dollar gains, emerging market currencies drop, giving these countries less buying power. And as the dollar peaks and begins to fall, the opposite will occur. So get in now. Don't wait for prices to get back up again. Call us at 1-800-375-4188. Now, before anyone had time to fully parse yesterday's inflation numbers, the rumbling had already begun on trading desks and at research shops. Maybe the Fed in 2 weeks' time will raise interest rates by a full percentage point, the most at a single meeting in its modern history. This possibility shows the jam the Fed's gotten itself into. Fed officials seek to convey a whatever-it-takes sense of urgency. And you know what? That's put them in a situation where high inflation readings demand an ever-escalating series of policy moves that, taken to their logical conclusion, end with a retrenched consumer and business spending and a cratering economy. Just last month, a high inflation reading drove Fed officials to make a last-minute shift to raise interest rates by 75 basis points. Instead of the half a percent increase they had long signaled. And here we go again, with yesterday's BLS report showing a 9.1% rise in the CPI over the last year and an uptick of monthly core inflation, 7%, 0.7% in June. You have Fed governors like Chris Waller saying today it was a major league disappointment. And the stock markets are agreeing. Set off alarm bells throughout the financial world that recent history would repeat. And by day's end, future markets pricing in a 1 percentage point rate hike in late July. Now, the handful of Fed officials who've spoken publicly since the release have appeared open-minded about whether escalating inflation requires an escalating policy response. In Waller's speech today, he said he concurrently favors sticking to a 0.75 percentage point rate hike. But if retail sales, which are out tomorrow, the latest report, and housing data throughout a little bit later, or materially stronger than expected, he would lean toward a larger hike at the next meeting, i.e. 1%. To the degree the Fed responds to higher inflation readings, not just with rate increases, but with increasingly larger rate increases, it's all but inevitable the Fed will over-tighten monetary policy and cause more pain, if not a lot more pain, than is necessary. Follow it to its logical conclusion, it would mean eventually ending up with an excessively restrictive policy as the Fed makes ever bigger policy moves in response to what's happened in the past as opposed to what it thinks will happen in the future. By the way, energy prices coming down pretty significantly this month. Now, Evercore ISI Vice Chair Krishna Guha said simply chasing headline inflation higher with ever larger units of hiking and a backward-looking outcome-based rule for stopping rate raising rates is likely to end badly. As Kansas City Fed President Esther George, generally a monetary hawk who dissented at the June meeting, said this week, moving interest rates too fast raises the prospect of oversteering. Look, Fed has spent the last year behind the curve in fighting inflation, but as we've been saying, there are perils in trying to fix that all at once. They say that as America goes, so goes the rest of the world. As G20 finance ministers gather in Bali this week, the International Monetary Fund's warning about the global economy's sea of troubles. IMF Managing Director Kristalina Georgieva wrote, it's going to be a tough 2022 and possibly an even tougher 2023 with increased risk of recession. That's around the world. The IMF is calling on countries to do everything in their power to slow price growth as the global inflation crisis mounts, and is urging governments to carefully assess the use of fiscal policy to support their economies. Georgieva wrote, new measures must be budget neutral, funded through new revenues or expenditure reductions elsewhere without incurring fresh debt and to avoid working against monetary policy. She also wrote that reducing debt is an urgent necessity, especially in developing countries, with debt denominated in foreign dollars that are most vulnerable to soaring borrowing costs. Some say this is somewhat of a throwback to calls for fiscal austerity that the IMF has moved away from, most recently at the beginning of the pandemic. But look, the IMF was likely going to slash its global growth forecast again later this month. In April, it projected the global economy would slow to 3.6% growth in 2022, down from 4.4% before Russia invaded Ukraine. And it looks like car manufacturers and dealers are actually making more money by selling fewer vehicles at higher prices. And some say this could be a lasting transformation for the auto industry, at least here in the U.S. After the chaos and disruption of the pandemic, sales and production of vehicles here in the country remain well below pre-pandemic levels. The annual weight of U.S. vehicle sales is now hovering around 13.5 million. That's down about 22% from the 17.5 million in 2019. As new vehicle inventories at dealers are incredibly low, with just 1.1 million cars available at the end of June, it's amazing. 2019, there were more than 3.5 million in stock. Making and selling fewer cars might seem to be a bad thing if your job is making and selling cars, but for vehicle makers and dealers, this new system's working out pretty well for a very simple reason, price. Prices of new and used cars are up about 30% since the end of 2019. The price surge has more than offset revenue declines from the slump in unit sales, resulting in strong profitability for both automakers and dealerships. Last year, for example, GM booked $10 billion in profits, its best performance in over a decade, and projecting profits of anywhere from $9.4 to $10.8 billion this year. Ford posted operating income of $10 billion last year. It's the company's best performance since 2016, despite producing 6% fewer vehicles than the previous year. Dealers also rake it in. Soaring prices have inflated their profit margins. In a recent survey of auto dealers by Cox Automotive, over 82% of respondents said profits were strong, despite a lack of cars to sell. But, and it's a big but, the supply chain recovery story, mostly focusing on the availability of semiconductors, may obscure the reality that the auto industry may just never return to its before-pandemic time patterns. Instead, we could be seeing the birth of a new model, business model that is, emphasizing lower production levels, higher prices, and fatter profit margins. Not necessarily a good scenario for us buyers. And that's the one group that's likely to be unsatisfied with the new status quo. To wit, the average price for all new cars in June, $48,000. A new record. One Cox automotive rep said, the new car market has really become a luxury market, and a lot of Americans are frozen out of it. Now, last today, it's been 10 months since the worst insider trading scandal in the 109-year history of the Fed made media headlines. Yesterday, Senator Sherrod Brown of Ohio, who chairs the Senate Banking Committee, along with four of his fellow senators, sent what's being characterized by Pam and Russ Martins as a stunning letter to Fed Chair Jerome Powell. Thrust the letter, the Fed's attempted to quiet the public outrage over the Fed's trading scandal last year, and that Powell's actually hampering the investigation into that scandal. You'll recall last September, Dallas Fed Prez Robert Kaplan, Boston Fed Prez Eric Rosengren stepped down or announced they would be stepping down as this trading scandal drew public outrage. In 2020, Kaplan was a voting member of the Open Market Committee and had access to inside information on numerous bailout programs the Fed was rolling out to deal mainly with the pandemic. At the same time, he was trading in lots of over $1 million in both stocks and S&P 500 futures contracts. Now, as we've explained before, S&P 500 futures contracts trade almost 24/7 from Sunday evening through Friday evening and thus can be used to trade after the stock market is officially closed and before it opens, a perfect vehicle for one who has insider information. And Kaplan's a sophisticated trader who previously worked at Goldman Sachs for 22 years, even rising to the rank of its vice chair. Now, the Dallas Fed hasn't told the Martins if Kaplan was using S&P 500 futures to short the market, you know, bet that the market would go down, which it did dramatically in the March of 2020. The Fed has refused on several requests from the Wall Street Journal, Bloomberg News, and Wall Street on Parade, the Martins publication, to release Kaplan's trading dates. Clearly, the Fed should have simply demanded that Kaplan turn over the mandated and long overdue dates of its trade. He just wrote multiple dates on his financial disclosure forms. And the Fed says, essentially, could not locate any documents. The Martins note that Kaplan's scandalous trading had been splashed all over the news by the time he finally agreed to step down on September 27th. But instead of Powell sending a statement of condemnation, Jay actually delivered a flowery send-off for Kaplan. Given the known facts at the time, the Martins believe, and I agree, the Powell statement was a dereliction of duty and could be seen as prejudicing a future investigation, which, by the way, has been turned over by Powell to the Fed's own Inspector General, as opposed to the Securities and Exchange Commission or the Department of Justice. Senator Elizabeth Warren called Powell a dangerous man during his confirmation hearings and refused to confirm his nomination to serve a second term as Fed chair. Powell began that new term on May 23rd. In addition to Kaplan's potential for insider trading as voter of the FOMC, Wall Street on Parade also found that Kaplan himself is making bold market-moving statements during the early 2020 financial crisis. Al Powell's own trading has come under scrutiny. Don't know where this goes or even what the details are, other than on October 18th, Bob Kuttner at the American Prospect broke the news that Powell had sold between 1 in 5 million of the Vanguard Stock Market Index Fund. On the same day, he had made four calls to then Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin. Something appears rotten and rotting further in Denmark, ladies and gentlemen. That's all the time that we have for today's program. I'll be back next Tuesday. Melody back tomorrow with Butch. Also be on the lookout for our blog tomorrow. Thanks always, our engineer Todd, and for you turning into financial survivor. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Have a good night. Bye-bye.